All right, everybody. Gudvar Shavua Tov. Parshas Vayishlach is the mainstay of the parsha, of course, is the encounter between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov is reunited with his brother Esav, who's been trying to kill him upwards of 20 years. And as I mentioned in the drasha on Shabbos, or before Shabbos, the surprise, of course, is that the encounter is not what we thought it may have been, but rather it's a quite peaceful, calm, and tranquil reunion of the two brothers. Esav shows a different side of him. But nonetheless, I would like to take a look again at multiple things, not just specifically in the encounter, but really throughout the parsha, you see a particular element of Yaakov, which we don't see really thus far. We spoke last week about Yaakov at length, in terms of blending the midos of Avram and Yitzchak, Avram being the mid of Chesed, Yitzchak being the mid of Gvura, and Yaakov really co-joining and combining and fusing those two together, and Yaakov being a person who is really, his entire essence is there to really create, to build Klal Yisrael, as we talked about last week. But I'd like to take a look at something else in Parshas Vayishlach, where you see another element of Yaakov emerging, which I think often is looked over, maybe is not even picked up upon or noticed, but I think in five places in this week's parsha, you see something really, really striking and important about Yaakov, and I think it has a critical lesson for us in terms of how to live our lives. Before the encounter of all encounters, and that is the encounter between Yaakov and Esav, there's another encounter that often is overlooked as well, and that's the encounter between Yaakov, not in Esav, but Yaakov and the Sarosh al Esav, Yaakov and the angel of Esav. And Yaakov, on the way to travel, as he meets and reunites with his brother, gets into a bit of a wrestling match with this Sarosh al Esav, with this angel of Esav. If you have the stone Chumash, it's on page 174, and I'll read the psukim wherever you're looking in Parshas Vayishlach, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, chapter 32, verse 23. The Pasuk says, Vayakam Balailahu, Yaakov arose in the evening, Vayikach Eshtei Nashav, Ves Eshtei Shivchosav, Ves Acharas Yoladav, Vayavor Es Ma'avar Yabok. So Yaakov took his two wives, Rachel and Leah, his two shvachos, Bilhah and Zilpah, crossed Ma'avar Yabok with them and his 11 children, and listen to what happens. Vayikachem, vayavirem es hanachal, vayavar eis asher lo. Yaakov crossed this Ma'avar Yabok, he crossed this stream, and everybody crossed the stream, and he took everything with him. Then the Torah says in Pasuk Chafei, Vayevaser Yaakov levado. Yaakov was left alone. Vayeavek ish imo ad alos hashachar, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. Now, just in Pashat Pshat, in the simple textual reading of the Psukim, we're left with a significant problem. The Pasuk says explicitly, clearly, that Yaakov crossed Ma'avar Yabok. He crossed the stream with his wives, with his shvachos, and with his 11 children. He brought everything with him. And then in the same breath, the next Pasuk says, Vayevaser Yaakov levado. Yaakov was left alone. What does that mean? If Yaakov just crossed with his four wives, 11 children, he's very busy, has a lot of family, has a lot of stuff with him. How in the world is he alone? Vayivaser Yaakov levado. We know that such a troubling pasuk became a song. Shlomo Karlbach made a song out of it. Vayivaser Yaakov levado v'yavavek ishimo adalos hashachar. I don't know why it's a song. A man wrestled with Yaakov and he was left all alone. I don't know what is necessarily inspiring about that to make it into a song. Nonetheless, it's a popular song. The Walters even sang it at lunch yesterday. But either way, what in the world is Yaakov doing alone if he's surrounded by his four wives and 11 children? Rashi in Masech, Rashi quoting the Gemara Maseches Chulin picks up on this problem, and Rashi on Pasuk Chafei says Vayivaser Yaakov, Yaakov was left alone, asks Rashi quoting the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Aleph, how was Yaakov alone? Shachach Pachem Ktan. The Gemara says that there's this storyline that's not explicit in the text that we have to fill you in on. Yaakov left Pachem Ketanim. He left these little earthenware vessels behind. Before he crossed, he forgot them. V'chazar aleim. So therefore, Yaakov crossed back Ma'avar Yabok. He left his 11 children, his four wives, and all the stuff with them on the other side of the river. He went back to where he started, crossed back again, to pick up these pachim kitanim, to pick up these little vessels. We're not going to talk about it now, But in many Sfarim, Sifrei Chassidus, Sifrei Kabbalah, they talk about, you know what was in there? What was in that little Pachim Ketanim? It was Shemin Zayas. It was olive oil. And of course, Parshas Vayishlach is always the Parsha we read prior to Hanukkah. And therefore, he had to go back to get them because that was going to be the oil that the Chashmonaim were going to find ultimately, Bizman, Bayis Sheni, in the miracle of the Hanukkah story. But listen to the rest of Rashi. Rashi says, Mikan, from this story you could see, Shehat Sadikim Chasim Al Mamonam, we see from this story the fact that Yaakov went out of his way and he traveled back, left his wives and his children and all this stuff to cross Ma'abar Yabok again. You see how important the possessions of tzaddikim are. That means it was so important to Yaakov that he went back to cross the other side of Ma'abar Yabok to pick up his pachim ketanim, these little vessels, maybe that oil, maybe they didn't have oil, maybe they had something, maybe they didn't have something, but it was so crucial to Yaakov, his possessions are so crucial to him that he had to cross over. He's about to have a reunion with his brother Esav, he hasn't seen in 20 years. His brother, he thinks, is going to kill him. At best, he's going to try to be his brother, and he's going to try to unite with him, and they should be spiritual brothers, which is also trouble, as the Beis Halevi says. So either way, Yaakov is in a very difficult predicament. And this is what Yaakov is concerned about, these pachim ketanim, these little jugs, these little earthenware vessels, that's what he's going back for. And on top of that, let us ask, why is it so critical to tzaddikim, to the pious, to the righteous, these little vessels? Mikan, and from here we prove, the Gemara posits, that it's so critical, the possessions, the physical possessions of tzaddikim. How in the world are we supposed to understand this Gemara? How do we understand Rashi? How do we understand the Pasuk? And how do we understand that Yaakov was so focused, so concerned, so overwhelmed about his little earthenware physical vessels? So let me try to give a mashal. It might not be such a good mashal, but at least it will bring out a piece, I think, of what Yaakov was doing. You know, imagine somebody, I don't know if you know somebody like this, I do, who loves vintage cars. Vintage cars. And he keeps 2, 3, 4 vintage cars in his very, very close proximity. He cares for his vintage cars. He built his vintage cars. He looks after his vintage car. One is a 1930 Ford. One is a 1920, I don't know. And one is a, you know, 1950 convertible. And he looks after his vintage cars with a lot of concern, with a lot of seriousness. So a guy like me comes over to this fellow and says to him, what are you joking me? You know, you get a Tesla. It's much quicker, it's much faster, it drives quicker. What are you so busy with your vintage cars for? They don't drive fast. You have to spend a lot of money fixing them and working them. And they don't do what a Tesla can do. They don't do what even my 2008 Toyota Camry can do. What are you so focused on your vintage cars for? If you ask such a question to a person who understands vintage cars, they'll look at you like you lost your marbles. Are you kidding me? Do you know what a vintage car is? Do you understand? Do you appreciate the value of a vintage car? Not just the fiscal value of a vintage car, but what it means to me and how important it is and that I built it and I cared for it. I found it. I manufactured it. That might be on some element what's happening with Yaakov. Yaakov cares significantly about his possessions and what he has. Not because the physical value of it, but because he understands that that which was given to me is mine. It's important to me. I have a connection with it. It has a certain element of hashkacha that these belong to me. This is what I have. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to me. This is what I deserve. This belongs to me. This is important to me because it sort of defines me in my relationship with Hashem. Many of us have a lot of old tchotchkes, and our kids will tell us, what in the world do you have this for? Get rid of it. Clear your house out. This is not important. It's not meaningful. Rid yourself of it. So we look at them, we say, are you kidding me? This has sentimental value. It's meaningful. I know it doesn't have any financial value to it, but this painting, this picture, this drawing, this letter, this book, and this article, they have meaning. But with Yaakov Avinu, it wasn't just the sentimental value, but to Yaakov it had a certain element of spiritual value to it, because he saw the things that he had as being meaningful to him, because that's what God gave me. I don't need the newest vessel. I don't need new vessels. But what I have belongs to me because it defines me, it shapes me, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to me. And therefore, that's what I have, that's what I need, and I don't need something else. So therefore, Yaakov Avinu is willing to cross back over Ma'avar Yavok, leaving his four wives and his 11 children and his stuff on some level of jeopardy. And again, he has in his mind now Esav, who's going to try to kill him or try to become his friend. Both, one is worse than the other. And nonetheless, Yaakov's focus at this moment is to recover these little vessels. Now, let's take this one step further. And I think what emerges from this story is a certain characteristic of Yaakov, which we haven't really seen thus far. And that is that Yaakov Avinu, when it comes to possessions and physical possessions, has a certain element of care and concern and recognizes what he has is enough. That's it. Right? Ezehu Ashir has Sameach Bechelko. Yaakov Avinu sort of lives and breathes that, as I will show you now. And his satisfaction for what he has, and his lack of desire for more, his understanding for what he has been given is so deep and is so real that it belongs to him, and that he can't have anybody grab or take hold of those pachan ketanim. Now, this is the first encounter, the encounter that Yaakov has with Sarah shel Esav. If you take a look at the encounter that Yaakov has with Esav, I'm going to show you now that this theme repeats itself again. Yaakov's real pure and basic understanding for what he has being enough, as opposed to Esav, sort of sits at the point of contention, at a conflict, in the dialogue that they have when they reunite. If you skip ahead to Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Tes, page 178 in the Stone Chumash, Parshas Vayishlach, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Tes, we all know Yaakov sends many great gifts, significant gifts for Esav, for his brother. He wants to try to appease him. Right? One of the three ways that Yaakov tries to appease his brother is through Doron, through sending him gifts. And Yaakov sends significant amount of gifts. And he slowly sends these gifts to him, so Esav will be more and more appeased, the more his eyes see. Slowly but surely, you get a present the first night of Hanukkah, the second night of Hanukkah, the third night of Hanukkah. It's much, much better than getting all your gifts in one night, because it's more exciting. So Yaakov slowly sends many, many gifts for Esav. And listen to Esav's reaction after receiving all these gifts. Pasuk Tes, Perek Lamed Gimel. Vayomer Esav, Yeshli Rav, Achi, Yihilecha Shelach. Yeshli Rav. Now, what does the word Rav mean? Esav says, I have plenty. You know, I really don't need that. It's enough. What you have sent me is really enough. But it's much more than that. It's not that Esav is saying that it's enough, don't worry about it. Esav is saying something much different. I have plenty and I will never be satisfied. It's never going to be enough. Rav means a majority. Rav means I'm never going to be fully satisfied. Whatever you send me, I'm going to want more. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef, as Shlomo Mel says. Somebody who has $100 wants $200. Ratzamana, ratzamasayim. You got 100, you're going to want more. You're never going to be satisfied. There's always going to be that desire to want more. You make your million, you want your second million, your third million. There's certain element of never being satisfied. Money has the ability to never allow a human being to be satisfied. And that is Esav, Yeshli Ravachi. And if you keep on looking in the Psukim, take a look at Yaakov's response. And it's clearly, clearly a response, a tennis volley right back at Esav. Because look what Yaakov says. Kachnas birchasir shehu vasalacha. Please, Esav, take what I have given. Ki chanani elokim, because God has given me. V'chiyesh li kol. I have everything. Esav says yesh li rav. Yaakov says yesh li kol, right? We say it in benching. Bakol, mikol, kol. Avram said bakol. Yitzchak said mikol. Yaakov said kol. I have everything. And if you take a look in Rashi, Rashi on this pasuk says, yesh li kol, kol sipukei. I have absolutely everything I need. The Esav diber b'lashon gaiva. Esav speaks in a very haughty language. Yesh li rav. I have plenty. Plenty meaning I don't have enough. Yoser v'yoser michtei tzorki. Esav says, I'm going to need more and more and more. There are two attitudes that a human being can have with the finances and with the possessions that they have. There's one human being who says, I have a million, I need a second million. There's another person who says, I have a million, I'm willing to make more and I need to, but I'm satisfied. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me what I need. And these are two very, very different approaches. And you see the second time with Yaakov that he has this very clear attitude that that which he has physically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has benched him, has blessed him, has been mevarich him with everything. He's satisfied with what he has. He's the world of Kol, the following the footsteps of his father and his grandfather, Bakol, Mikol, Kol, and Esav will never be happy. Esav will never be satisfied. It's always looking for more, wanting more, never being satisfied, never being happy with his lot. Thus, we see this continuous tension between the two brothers, and I think deep down at the bottom of the story here and the dialogue, the communication, in the confrontation between Yaakov and Esav, this philosophical difference really speaks in large extent to what is really gnawing at Yaakov, and that is the Kol versus the Rav. But it follows itself again as the parsha continues. If you take a look, as Yaakov and Esav split and part ways, as Esav tries very hard for Yaakov and his family to come with him, Yaakov says, I'm sorry, my brother, I can't travel with you. We are too different. Our approaches, our worldview, our philosophy is too disparate. We can't dwell, we can't live together. Our ideologies are different, our worldviews are different, our goals are different. It's an impossibility for us to settle together. I'm thankful that you didn't kill me, but I also have to protect myself spiritually, and therefore the pasuk says, Esav head to Seir. Where does Yaakov go? Take a look at this. The pasuk says, pasuk yudzayin, Vayashav bayamahu Esav ledarko seira. Esav travels to Seir. That's his home front. That's his territory. V'Yaakov nasa sukosa. Yaakov settles in a place called Sukos. Vayiven lo bayis. And he builds for himself a home. Ulemiknehu asa sukos. And for his livestock, he makes shelters. Al Kain Kara Shem Hamakom Sukos. Therefore, Yaakov calls the name of this place Sukos. It's a lot to talk about here. Let's make two significant points. Number one, we've spoken about this in a different context and maybe over the years. Note, by the way, the name that Yaakov gives this place where he settles, he calls it Sukos. Now, we all know the holiday, of course, the holiday of Sukkos. And it's no coincidence that we call the Yontif of Sukkos, Sukkos, and the first time we find the name of this holiday is in this week's Parsha, Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov calling the place where he settles Sukkos. Now, this simple correlation between the two, and maybe even the reason for referring to the holiday of Sukkos, because we dwell in a sukkah, which is some sort of shelter, is the fact that a sukkah is a place of refuge. It's a place of safety, right? After the holidays, the Yomim Noraim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we need some sort of refuge. We need a place to find shelter. We want to make sure that we concretize everything that we have accomplished in the days of awe during the Yomim Noraim, and therefore we find shelter in the sukkah. Ki bitzel knofecha tastireinu, Kadosh Baruch Hu hovers and watches and looks after us, and we sort of hide in the cocoon, in the bubble, and we quarantine in the sukkah to take care and to make sure that we are spiritually safe and to concretize everything we have gained over the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. That is a simple correlation between the fact that we call the holiday Sukkos, and Yaakov, of course, finds shelter. And Yaakov is able to find peace, safety, tranquility, quarantine after 20 plus years of battling, fighting, running from his brother. Yaakov settles in a place called Sukkos, which is a place where he finds cover, rest, and he's safe and secure and taken care of. Thus, the comparison and the between Sukkos, the holiday, and Sukkos, the place where Yaakov finds himself. But I want to ask another question, and that is, why does Yaakov call the new home Sukkos, not for the fact that he settled there, but for the fact that he found a place for his livestock there? The pasuk says very clearly in Yudzayin, Vayivin lo bayis, he built for himself a home. And for his livestock, he built a sukkah, a shelter. Al Kain Karashem Amakamahu Sukkos, and therefore he called this place Sukkos. So call the name of the place Bayis, right? We have in Yerushalayim, Bayit Vegan, right? So you could have easily called it Bayit or Bayis. Why does he call it Sukkos for the shelter of his livestock? Are his livestock so important? Are his livestock so crucial? Is it so important that he names it Sukkos as opposed to naming it Bias for the house that he finally fashioned, secured, and had? How do we understand the name focusing on his shelter for the flock, for his livestock, as opposed to his home? The Or Chaim HaKadosh on this pasuk says that, interestingly, we find for the first time the care and concern for animal kingdom. Right? We never saw that. In Noach and the Mabul, we saw that Noach was forced to save the animals. But since the refuge, and since the Mabul, and since the world was turned over, it's the first time you see in biblical history the concern for the animal kingdom, for livestock. And therefore, Yaakov showed serious concern, and therefore that's the reason why he named it Sukkos, that this speaks sort of to the concern that we should have for animals and the animal kingdom. But I want to take a different approach. And that's falling in line with a theme that we have already begun with. And that is Yaakov Avinu calls this place Sukkos because it speaks to him and who he is. A sukkah is a diras arai. A sukkah is not a permanent place of living. A sukkah is a place of temporary living. Because Yaakov Avinu understands his place in this world as very temporary. And the physical stuff that he has are there to serve him and are there as a way to take care of his necessities and the things that he needs. But he calls it Sukkos to really concretize and to speak to who he was and the worldview which we should follow. And that is looking at our homes and looking at our lives as temporary and understanding that the possessions that we have are not kavua. We're not going to take them with us. And that's the message of Sukkos, and that's the message of the sukkah, that we could live in a diras arai, that we could be satisfied with three shaky walls and some schach. We could do it. No, we can't live there for 300 plus days a year. It gets cold and it gets hot. But we have to inculcate this into our theology, into our understanding, into our Weltanschauung, to understand that we are a people who can live with less. We can live the life of Yaakov being satisfied with what we have, the life of Kol, the life of Nat Rav, the life of recognizing that we have Pachem Ketanim, and those Pachem Ketanim are meaningful, are important to us, and they shouldn't be shaked. Maybe you're familiar, there's a well-known story that took place with the Chafetz Chaim. Also was made into a song, a beautiful song. The Chafetz Chaim was visited by an individual who entered his home and saw that the Chafetz Chaim had such basic menial belongings. And the fellow looked at the Chafetz Chaim and said to him, "You, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kohen Kagan, you know, Rabban Shel Kol Bnei Agola, the Gadol Hador, it doesn't make sense that you live the way that you do with such base poverty, and in really such simplicity, without any furnishings." So Chafetz Chaim looked at the fellow and said to him, "Well, where are you staying? Where are you coming from?" He says, "I'm just passing through. I'm a traveler, and therefore I'm staying in an inn." So Chafetz Chaim said to him, "Did you bring all your belongings? Did you set up the place where you're staying very, very securely? Did you furnish it the way that you furnish your home where you live?" He says, "No, of course not. I'm just here for a little bit. I'm just passing through." The Chafetz Chaim said to him, "I'm also just passing through. And therefore, that's why my home looks the way that it does." Chafetz Chaim really lived in a sukkah all year. We try and live in a sukkah for 8 days and we have a problem with that, right? But Yaakov really lived this life. And Yaakov was living and understanding that his Pachem Ketanim were critical, crucial, and important to him because that's what Hashem gave him and that's what meaningful to him. And that's what he tells his brother Esav, "You're missing it, my brother. If you're living the world of Rav, you're never going to be satisfied. Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. If you're running after money and you're running after more and more, you're never going to be satisfied. You're never going to have enough. There's never going to be that sense of satisfaction." And that's what Yaakov expresses here as well when he finishes the battle with his brother Esav, and he settles and he tries to live a life of tranquility after the struggles, which we know will not come to an end. And Yaakov settles in this place and calls it Sukkos because that's what life is. Life is like a sukkah, not like a box of chocolate. It's a sukkah. And that's what we try to do to be able to satisfy, be happy, and understanding that what we have is sufficient and it's enough. But now take a look in the next pasuk, and the theme, I believe, continues. Pasuk Yurches, Perek Lamed Gimel. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. So Yaakov leaves the city of Sukkos where he begins to settle, and Yaakov comes to a city called Shalem Ir Shechem. Yaakov comes to the city of Shechem. Now it doesn't say Vayavo Yaakov Ir Shechem. Yaakov traveled to the city of Shechem. There's an extra word. Look at the extra word in the pasuk. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. Yaakov came satisfied. Shalem. Shalem little means intact, whole, to the city of Shechem. Why does the Torah add that word, Shalem? Why does the Torah tell us that Yaakov came to the city of Shechem full, complete, without missing anything intact? Picks up on Rashi, and Rashi picks up on this. Take a look. Rashi, Pasuk Yurches Shalem. Rashi says, Yaakov came satisfied, complete, intact, three different ways. Shalem Begufo. He came physically intact, satiated. Shinisrape mitzalaso. He was healed by the attack of the Sarah Shal Esav. We all know the Sarah Shal Esav attacked Yaakov in his hip, right? And Yaakov was limping. It was a wrestling match. Yaakov was healed. Thus, he entered the city of Shechem Shalem. He was completely cured and was feeling absolutely, positively, perfectly intact. Shalem b'mamono. He was complete financially, economically. Shelo chaser klum mikol oso daron. He wasn't missing anything after he gave away so much to Esav. You remember, he sent so much gifts and significant amount of bounty to Esav. Says Rashi that he was still complete, intact financially. He didn't lose anything. Shalem b'toraso, complete, intact, with all of his Torah knowledge. Shelo shachach talmudo beveis Lavan. He forgot nothing of his Torah in the house of Lavan. And here, Rashi speaks to Yaakov and who Yaakov was. Yaakov was intact financially, was intact spiritually, and was intact health-wise from a physical element. That's Yaakov Avinu. He had everything. He had everything he needed. He had his health. He had his finances. He had his Torah. Check, check, and check. That's Shlemus. Now, it doesn't mean that Yaakov had enormous success. It doesn't mean that Yaakov had enormous amounts of everything that Rashi is referring to. But Shlemus is the Shlemus of the Sukkah. The Sukkah doesn't need four walls, but it's still called Shalem. It doesn't mean that I have everything and I still could have coal. It doesn't mean everything and I still have my pach and ketanim. Thus Yaakov lived this life of enough, of satisfaction. The world of Ezehu Ashir Hasamech Bechelko Shlemus Shalem Bakol Mikol Kol. I can't remember where, but I once read a fascinating story, which I really think speaks to this. The very famous novelist, Joseph Heller, who wrote the book Catch-22, and I think it takes place, was at a party with Kurt Vonnegut, also the famous author. And the two of them were talking and conversing, and they're at a home of a billionaire. Some billionaire, I don't remember exactly what the individual, some billionaire financial mogul. And I think it was Vonnegut turned to Heller and said to him, you know, you wrote one of the most famous books in American history, Catch-22. Who doesn't know Catch-22? The amount of books that you sold won't even compare to the amount of money that this guy will make in 12 hours. And Heller turned to Vonnegut and said to him, there's something that I have that he doesn't. And that is enough. Enough. I have enough. And that's something that this billionaire will never have. And I think that really very much speaks to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov was kol. He was pachim kitanim. He was shalem. He was everything that he needed, he had. There was satisfaction. There was sufficient amount of that. And that's what I think emerges from a second look at Yaakov Avinu, specifically in Parshas Vayishlach. It's a different insight into who Yaakov was, and it's a different insight into understanding the Maimar of Chazal, Ezehu Ashir HaSamech Becholko, which we always understand to mean that wealth is considered to be when I feel that I have what I need. And it's so true, right? You could look at people who have less, and you could look at people who have more, and you could see that the people who have more often are not as happy as the people who have less. You always tell me this, Mrs. Iger, with your siblings. I'm not going to say more than that, but, you know, there are people who have less who are happier than people who have more. And I think we all know that. There's a certain sense of satisfaction when somebody has what he or she needs. regarding your question, why do you go back for the Pachim Ketanim? It's exactly that. Because the Pachim Ketanim to Yaakov represented that he had something from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was given a gift by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The small little earthenware vessel was important to him because that meant that that's all that he needs. He doesn't want to have to start going shopping for new earthenware vessels. He doesn't want to have to go to Kugler's now. He's happy with his earthenware vessel. He has enough. What do I need to get new earthenware vessels? It's not necessary. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave me that earthen vessel. If that earthenware vessel was given to me, that means that that earthenware vessel is enough for me. And it represents my relationship with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that is enough. Yes, exactly. Shalish, shalach, shalish, 100%, right? There's never that element of satisfaction with Esav. And Esav kept on looking and looking and looking and wanting and wanting and wanting. And Yaakov is pumfakert, exactly the opposite. And of course, this is a state which is a challenge. The Chavetz Chaim lived this way. Tzaddikim lived this way. You know, we know people like this. I've seen people, you know, living in Yerushalayim for 10 years. You see people who live with nothing and they really, really feel that they're missing nothing. They have what they need. They're satisfied with what they have. And it's a different life. It's a different life. And the world of Yaakov, the world of the Chafetz Chaim, the world of people who are living with what they have is a very, very valuable thing. Now, this could mean that a person could have, you know, billions of dollars and also have that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses everybody with the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses everybody. But there are plenty of very successful people who are very satisfied. And then they understand that they've been given what they have been given. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has benched them. And they're also satisfied. And they're also very happy. And they understand how to deal with that situation. And Baruch Hashem. But that is a message which I think emerges from Parshas Vayishlach and seeing who Yaakov Avinu was. Just to put this into a full circle, into complete context, if you look back in the opening of Parshas Vayetze, you see that really Yaakov began his life like this also. And it really turns into a full circle. As Yaakov Avinu is heading out from Be'er Sheva to Charan, so he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, I'm going to ask you one thing. Vayidor Yaakov neder lemor. Yaakov offers a promise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Im yeh Elokim imadi, God, if you will be with me, ushmarani b'derech hazeh, you take care of me. I'm running away. I'm leaving my mother's home. I'm leaving my father's house. Esav is running after me. This is immediately when after the brachos were received by Yaakov and his mother Rivka forces him to go on the run. So Yaakov says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, if you just take care of me and you look after me, V'nasim li lechem le'echol ve'gilul vosh. All I ask for is two things, bread to eat and clothing to wear. Yaakov doesn't need anything else, he doesn't want anything else, he doesn't ask for anything else. Lechem lechol u've'gilul vosh. That's the world of Yaakov, that's of course a level that we should aspire and try to attain. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach. I want to conclude with, I think maybe is a related characteristic trait of Yaakov. The way we've understood Yaakov thus far is the world of Ezehu Ashir Hasameach Bechelko. That being satisfied and being happy is the understanding that I have what I need is more from a physical, financial perspective. I would like to show, I think, two questions that always troubled me about Yaakov, but just yesterday, I think I cracked it a little bit differently with Yaakov Avinu based upon the message and the understanding of the Parsha thus far. Perek Lamed Daled of Parshas Vayishlach, chapter 34, of course, is the very sad story of the abduction of Yaakov's daughter Dina. Dina is attacked, raped, abducted when Shechem ben Hamor sees her. And then take a look in Pasuk Hey, early, immediately after this takes place, Yaakov hears what happens. And Pirek Lamedal Pasuk Hey, Vayakov Shama. Yaakov hears, Ki time es Dina bito. He hears that his daughter Dina has been defiled. He understands what's happened. He's heard the news. Ubanav Haya es Mikneo Basada. His sons are in the field. Vehecherish Yaakov ad Boa. And Yaakov is silent until they return. And Yaakov's silence is a deafening silence. Yaakov, your daughter's just been abducted, raped. How could Yaakov just be silent? Vehecherish Yaakov ad Boa. Yaakov was silent until the arrival. It almost sounds like the silence of Vayidom Aaron. That's what it's reminiscent of. When Aaron is silent after the death of his two sons, Nadav and Avihu, there's a certain element of silence. There, Aaron can't do anything, and his silence is a powerful sign of acceptance. Does this mean that Yaakov simply accepts what happened? Here, Yaakov can do something about it. And we all know what Yaakov's two sons, Shimon and Levi, did about it. But now think about Yaakov's final last will and testament when he screams at his two sons, Shimon and Levi. And he tells them, you should not have done what you did. You acted irresponsibly, right? Klei chamas mecheroseihem. Stolen weaponry. That's not your art. That's not your craft. You shouldn't have done what you did. How did you act the way that we did? And it always troubled me, Yaakov's silence here. Until I read the pasuk again carefully. The pasuk says, v'hecherish Yaakov ad boam, that Yaakov was silent until his sons returned. Yaakov had a certain sense of acceptance. Yaakov accepted his financial strait. He understood and accepted what a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him. But I think also emotionally, Yaakov accepted challenges that occurred to him. His silence was not a silence of acceptance that I'm not going to do anything about it, because v'hechrish Yaakov ad boam. Yaakov was silent until his sons came back. Now it was only a rumor. Yaakov didn't know what happened. He had to get the facts. Yaakov wasn't saying, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to be quiet, and I'm not going to allow anything to happen. Of course there's going to be retribution. And of course I'm going to stand strong, as Yaakov does, certainly at the end of his life, when he speaks very, very powerfully to Shimon and Levi. Yaakov's not going to allow this just to go unanswered, and nobody's going to talk about it, and there's going to be suffering in silence. That's not what's going to happen here. But Yaakov is quiet because he accepts what happens as part of a bigger picture, as part of a bigger worldview. I need to do something about it, but I need to wait, and I need to be careful. I think Yaakov's silence here speaks to the same emotional state that he has with his physical satisfaction. And then it made me realize something else. Because if you turn to the end of the parsha, after the story of Yaakov's daughter Dina being abducted, there's another sad story which takes place, and a story where Perek Lamed Hey, Pasuk Chavbez, as we're all familiar, after the death of Rachel, Leah's eldest son, Reuven, is very disappointed that Yaakov moves his bed into the tent of Bilhah. And Reuven, the son of Leah, feels that that's an affront to his mother, Leah. Really, once Leah has passed away, he should move his bed into the tent of his mother, Leah. And if you take a look, the pasuk says the following thing. Vayelech Reuven, vayishkav es Bilhah pilegesh aviv, right? This is in Perek Lamed Hey, Pasuk Chavez. Reuven lies with Bilhah. Now, of course, we all know, based upon Chazal, Rashi fills us in. Of course, that's not what happened. Reuven simply moved the bed out of Bilhah into his mother Leah's tent. And we see that as a terrible affront of Reuven. Vayelech Reuven, vayishkav es Bilhah pilegesh aviv, vayishma Yisrael. Who's Yisrael? Yisrael, of course, is Yaakov. His name has been changed from Yaakov to Yisrael. Yisrael listens and he hears. But what does he do? Take a look. If you have a Chumash and if you have a Sefer Torah in front of you, you will see there's a major pause. There's blank space. Silence. There's nothing there. And then the Torah continues in the same pasuk. Vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar. Yaakov had 12 sons. Meaning he forgave Reuven for what he did. Reuven is still written on the breastplate, on the choshen of the Kohen Gadol. But look at the pasuk, it's startling. Vayishkav es pilegesh aviv, Reuven lied with the pilegesh, the concubine of Yaakov. That's Bilhah. Vayishma Yisrael, Yisrael hears. Well, what did Yaakov do? There's no words, there's no talking. V'hecherish Yaakov, Yaakov is silent, the same way he was silent when he heard about his daughter. Yes, it's true, I saw what you said in terms of a rape. Of course, he has to respond, he has to react, and he does react. And we'll see later in the psukim that he speaks to his sons and they have to figure out a plan. But nonetheless, Yaakov is silent in both times. And it's an amazing, amazing insight into Yaakov in terms of the same way that physically he had this sense of being satisfied and understanding that what he has is enough in a physical element. Emotionally and spiritually as well, Yaakov Avinu also sees the things that happened to him and to his family as well as part of a bigger picture. Now I see you're all asking the same question. Of course Yaakov is going to respond. Of course Yaakov is going to react. And there needs to be a plan. But right now Yaakov is not with his family and Yaakov didn't hear what happened and it was a rumor. So Yaakov has to deal with it and to address it when his sons get home, and Yaakov does address it. But there's something that emerges here that I think sheds light on who Yaakov was, not only in the world of physicality, in the world of Gashmias, did Yaakov show a sign of resilience and satisfaction, of Ezehu Asher Asameach Bechelko, but also in the world of the spirit, in the world of the emotion, in the world of his understanding of how things happen, there also is that sense of Yaakov being satisfied and appreciative of what he had. That is the way that I wanted to shed light on Yaakov Avinu in terms of Parshas Vayishlach. I'm happy to take any questions, to talk and to discuss in terms of who Yaakov was, what Yaakov was doing. Feel free, should you wish. Everybody should have a great week. Shavua Tov, a good vach.